I am Betty Tisdale. I'm the founder of an organization called HALO, Helping and Loving Orphans. And prior to that, my first trip to Vietnam was in 1961, and I went there every year for 14 years until 1975 when I airlifted the babies, and then went back, I guess it was in 1995 or 96, and continued with helping the orphans. I went to Vietnam because I had read a book written by Dr. Tom Dooley called Deliver Us from Evil, and he spoke of his experiences as a young Navy doctor in North Vietnam helping the North Vietnamese flee to the South. And the book was so vivid and so heartrending that I decided that I wanted to help him, so I offered my services as a secretary. I was living in New York City, and I started to write letters for him and so on, and became so involved that as a young doctor, he was only 33, he died one day after his 34th birthday of cancer. And I continued. I made my first trip then in 1961, right after he died, to go to Vietnam to see exactly what he was talking about. Well, the thing was, I didn't even know about President Ford at that time. Since I was so involved with Anlac Orphanage, that's A-N-L-A-C, for 14 years, and we had over 400 children, I decided that I did not want to leave them in Vietnam if I could possibly get all 400 out. And since I was not one of the seven recognized adoption agencies, I had to do this on my own. I was not involved with the government. The government arranged, I guess, with President Ford that these agencies could get their children out, but I was not involved in that. So I had to try to get my own planes, get a place for them, make sure that they got adopted, all of that on my own. It was called Baby Lift because I came out at the same time that some of the other organizations came out, actually right after Rosemary Taylor's C-5A crashed. I was on my way over to Vietnam at that time, but she was also one of the recognized agencies. I was not. Oh, I was sickened. I didn't know what to do. And I thought at that time, I think we all thought that it was probably sabotage or something like that. And but it wasn't going to bother me because I was trying to get a plane. I called Pan Am. I called other agencies to see whether I could get hooked onto theirs, and I couldn't. So I went over to Vietnam on a Tuesday. I arrived on a Tuesday and went directly to Ambassador Martin and said, you know, I'm taking 400 children out and I have no way to get them out. Can you help me? And he had known me. I'd gone to him many times for other things. And he said, if you can get the manifest signed by the Vietnamese government, I'll see that you get some planes. And these were then Air Force planes that he was talking about. So I took the manifest, which had about 400 names on them, to the Vietnamese government on Wednesday, the next day. And Dr. Dan said, Mrs. Tisdale, I'm sorry, I can't sign this. And this was about 10 days before Vietnam fell. And I think the Viet Cong or the North Vietnamese were within about 12 miles of the city. And I said, he said, you can't take out any child over 10. And I said, why? And he said, because we're going to hang on. We're going to hold out. We know we're going to get help, and we're not going to let the North Vietnamese take over. So I had to take the manifest back to the orphanage. Madame Nye, who was the directress, was adamant. She wanted all the children out or none. And I had a big argument with her saying that I would come back for the rest of them. And so we revised the list. And naturally, you know, Vietnamese are very tiny. And we didn't have birth certificates. That was the other thing that he said. He said, you have to have birth certificates for every child. And we didn't have birth certificates because these were abandoned children. They're left at the gates. Nobody knew where they came from. They were given names and so on. So we revised the list, and we made up birth dates for all of them and didn't have birth certificates. So I went to the hospital, and I said, I need birth certificates. And they gave me a whole big stack of them, and we went back to the orphanage and filled them all out. So since we didn't have birth certificates, I took out a lot of children who were over 10. And it bothered me that no one ever checked that list at all. I could have taken all 400. But anyhow, we revised the list, and I got 219 on the list. And took it back to Dr. Dan. He okayed it. Then I took it back to Ambassador Martin. That was on Thursday. And he said, okay, Betty, be ready to leave at 11 o'clock tomorrow morning. Now, I had arrived Tuesday night, so I had Wednesday and Thursday. 11 o'clock, they sent buses, army buses, to the orphanage, and all the children were dressed in new clothes that Madame Nye had stuck in the back of the orphanage, and they were crying, and the babies, I had babies in baskets, but the babies were, they didn't allow me then to take them, the baskets on the plane. They had to transfer the babies to boxes so they could be strapped down. And that's how I got the kids out. And they gave me two planes. I forget what they were, what kind of planes they were. They were cargo planes, though. And these children had never left the orphanage, let alone get in an airplane. So they got sick, and they were throwing up and all that. And I didn't. And also, Ambassador Martin said you have to have one escort for each 10 children. And I said, oh, no problem. But I couldn't get anyone. I made an announcement, a free trip to the United States for anybody who wants to take care of a baby. I got one Australian. And he said, okay, I'll change nappies until we get to the Philippines. And so I left with him and some of the crew who were feeding babies and so on. And that's how I did it. Then we got to the Philippines, and the servicemen's wives had gotten together, and they changed the kids' clothes, and we had their names on name tags on their little outfits. And, of course, they all went into a bin to be thrown away. So I lost all their names. And I practically walked across the Pacific trying to identify which baby was which and which child was which and so on. And by the time we got to California, to Los Angeles, it was so hot we had to wait for the mayor to get on the plane. And in the meantime, one of my babies died. It was a twin. And they took about 30 of my children and put them in various hospitals because they had never seen malnourished children as small as that. My youngest daughter was not on that baby lift, but she weighed less than 5 pounds at 3 months old. So they were tiny, and our public health people had never seen babies that small. So they took about 30 of them, and then from there, I had to get a plane. My husband, who was in Columbus, Georgia, waiting for me, got a plane, and we paid $21,000 for a United Airlines plane to take the rest to Fort Benning, Georgia, where we arrived. Well, at Fort Benning, they were housed in a school. And before I left, I tried to find a place to put them. I was thinking I was going to get 400. So we were right near Fort Benning. I was in Columbus, Georgia. So I noticed that they had empty barracks, and I called the general to see whether he would give me some empty barracks to put the kids in. And I had also called the Tresler Lutheran Adoption Agency to come down and arrange for the adoption, since I was not an adoption agency. And so I called the general, and he never returned my call. So I thought, well, I'm going over his head. So I called the Secretary of the Army, Bo Calloway, and in Washington, D.C., and he never returned my call. So I called his mother. And his mother said, Mrs. Tisdale, I'll do the best I can. And I did that the day before I left Columbus. So when I got back, they had arranged for a school, a whole school with a, you know, playground and all of that for the children. They were there less than a month, and they were all adopted within a month, mostly into Pennsylvania. I don't, from then on, because there were quite a few in the Columbus area, although to tell you the truth, the Department of Human Resources, whatever, didn't want too many of the Asian children in Georgia. And so most of them were adopted outside of Georgia. I can say nasty things about them, but I won't. Well, I never heard that. And I don't know what helicopter she's talking about, because not any of the children were in helicopters. They were all on planes. And the adoption agencies were well taken care of once they got to the States, and because they were adopted through agencies, and agencies are sticklers for rules and regulations and so on. And they had lists of people who have been wanting to adopt for years. And that's the way with Tresler Lutheran. I chose Tresler Lutheran Adoption Agency because they placed hard-to-place children. And since a lot of mine were older, most people don't want older children. They want babies. But they were all adopted. And as far as I know, they seem to be fine. I get visits from all of them. Not all of them, but I get visits, and I have pictures in my house of the children who have come to see me and so on. Oh, yeah, they come back to see me. I get emails. Well, I get emails from them and so on. One of the babies did my website. Another one, Jared, writes music and poetry, and I'm in touch with him. I'm in touch with so many of them, really, that I can't give you names, but I have, you know, I take pictures of them. And Vicky is one. Vicky is a baby. She was a baby. She was about 2 years old, I guess, 2-3 years old, when she came over. And she was adopted by a university professor and a federal court judge. And her mother was the judge, and highly educated. And she was given the best of everything. And even when her mother went to Vietnam for a visit, she didn't want to go. She sort of suppressed the fact that she was Asian until she grew up. And then she saw something in Life magazine, you know, who of all the people in the United States, who would you like to meet? And she, within 50 words or less or something, and she said, I'd like to meet Betty Tisdale, the woman who saved my life. And so Life magazine and Dateline got together and brought her from Pennsylvania to Seattle to meet me for the first time. And we cried, and we looked at pictures, and now she has two babies, and I went to her wedding. And now they may have this feeling. Mine didn't have this feeling of being different, because they grew up with me, and it didn't matter what color or anything like that. And I don't know. My children seem to be different. I have one, my older child, who is, she was about 7 or 8 when I adopted her in 72. She decided she wanted to live in Hawaii when she grew up, because everybody looked like her. And so that she was the only one. But the others have gone on, graduated from George Washington University, Penn State, all of that. One's a fifth grade teacher, one's a vice president of Morgan Stanley, and so on. I mean, they've done well. Of course, they don't all live here in Seattle, which I make them feel guilty about, but yeah, they're good kids. And the ones that I've met are, I don't know the family history of a lot of them, because they were placed by an agency, but the agency had gotten home studies and everything and had everything ready for children to be adopted. The people who were the head of Trezler Lutheran adopted like 18 children, you know. I mean, they were just wonderful. Some of them had polio and so on, you know. The people that want to adopt really want to adopt children. Madame Nye, who was the directress of Anlach Orphanage, was reluctant to have her children be adopted because she had this feeling that people only wanted someone to work in their home or someone to be slaves. She would never allow a soldier to adopt because she thought that they were going to do other things. And the Asian mind is a little bit different than Americans as far as adoptions. After 20 years, I went back and I took my youngest daughter, Kim Lon. And I said, you know, we don't know who your biological parents are or if they're still alive, but maybe we can go to the hospital and dig up something. And I said, are you interested? And she said, no, you're my mom and that's all I care about. Now, I know that there are quite a few Vietnamese children who want to go back and find their biological parents. And in fact, if you saw Daughter from Da Nang, that is a very sad story. And I have feelings about that girl. I just don't think that she was nice to her. She found her mother. And to me, if any of my children could find their mothers, they would find that the only reason they gave them up is they wanted to save their lives. And this mother gave up this child to save her life, and then this woman treats her like dirt. You know, terrible. Oh, yes. Oh, that was wonderful. I only knew, I brought out Madame Nye. I guess it was the day Vietnam fell. I got her out through the ambassador and her assistant, Miss Took, and a couple others, and brought them out, and they live with me. So I had 10 kids, plus all of them. And it was through Miss Took, who kept in touch with some of the older children, and she gave me their names and so on. And I looked up one of them, and I wrote to them, and I said, I'm coming at a certain date. Could we arrange to meet? Well, she got about 60 of them together. And they were wonderful. We went to somebody's little hut on I guess it was his farm. He kept pigs. And everybody got together. And in the bus, I rented a bus. And in the bus going out there, I don't speak Vietnamese. And they started to sing Jingle Bells, Old MacDonald Had a Farm, and Row, Row, Row Your Boat, which was to let me know that they hadn't forgotten me, because that's what I used to teach them. Oh, that was, made me cry. So I see them every year. We have a reunion. I go back every year. We have a reunion. Now I meet their children, and their children are doing well. You know, they're still having a hard time, but the children go to school. They couldn't go to school because they had no identity. They had no papers. And according to the communist government over there, if you don't have any papers, you can't go to school. But their children do. And I've sent money for, you might say, scholarships. As long as they keep their grades up, there's no charge for school over there. But they don't give them any money for paper, pencils, or books. So for about $300 or $350, someone can go to school, higher school. And I ask for that from some people, for their children. Well, when I married my husband, whom I met in Vietnam, he was a pediatrician, but he was chief of the 1st Infantry Division Medical Battalion. And he and his corpsman used to come to the orphanage about once or twice a week and examine the children, take care of them. Sometimes they took them to the zoo. I asked them if they would put in toilets, indoor toilets and so on, which they did. They were marvelous. Anyhow, his wife died when he came back, and he had 5 little boys. So he asked me to marry him. And I was a secretary all my life. I didn't even know how to cook. And I said, yes, you know, it would save me a lot of time if I had five little boys. And 7 months later, we decided to go back to, I was going back to Vietnam, and we started adopting the girls. And within a year, year and a half, we had five little girls. And that's how I adopted the children. It was a learning process for me as well as them. The little girls were adorable. I mean, I would walk down the streets or take them shopping, and everyone said, oh, aren't they beautiful? They're beautiful. And the boys took care of them. You know, the boys were ages 5 to 12. So it seems sort of like each boy had their little favorite, and they would do things, you know, give them their bath or whatever. And even to this day, Sean was the surrogate father for Tuvon at Wesleyan University, and Patrick took care of one of the others, and James took care of my Laura. When they were in college, they'd be sending them money and so on. So it's a loving family. Yes, I did, because I felt that they certainly looked Vietnamese. And I didn't think that they looked like a Debbie or a Susie or anything like that. But I gave them, Caucasian middle names and said they could choose. Like Tuvon is Tuvon Elizabeth, but she never goes by that. And my Laura is my Laura Tom Dooley Tisdale, and I gave her Tom Dooley's birthday. I gave them all their birthdays, too, because we didn't have real papers for them. So I switched Swan's birthday from April to December 1 year, depending on how she was doing in school. No, the culture didn't. I mean, they love Vietnamese food. I love Vietnamese food. It was hard to get Vietnamese food in Georgia. So I would get recipes and so on. But no, it wasn't that. It was just that I had been to Vietnam for so many years before I adopted, and I'd learned to love those children. Those babies were my babies, and I would have taken all of them if I could have. I would have adopted all of them. I adopted one baby in 72 that I always took babies that looked like they might not survive, and this one little baby, I named her Kim Lan, and when we got to the Philippines, we had an overnight there. I was on an army plane with my husband, and we rushed her to the hospital, and she died 2 days later. So then I called Madame Nye through at the embassy. I had them patch into her and asked her to get me another baby, and I named her Kim Lan, and that was where my daughter Kim Lan came from. Yeah, that was the reason. I was under the impression, as most people were at the time, that the communists would, that there would be a bloodbath, that even Madame Nye heard that she was on a death list, and that anyone who had received help from the Americans would be killed. This is the feeling that we all had, and that was why there was such a rush to get the children out. And even you've seen news pictures of the Vietnamese clamoring up the walls of the embassy, trying to get out because they were deathly afraid that they would be killed. As it turned out, they weren't killed, but a lot of them were sent to re-education camps. All of the soldiers that fought in the South were sent to re-education camps. Anyone that had anything to do with Americans and the American government were sent to re-education camps. And the older children that I left behind were all sent to re-education camps. And one of them became a nurse after that. They sent her to work as a menial job in a hospital, and she later became a nurse, and I'm working with her now. I'm building a clinic in a village in the jungles for the ethnic minority, because they have nothing over there. So, you know, a lot of they had a hard life, but they're coming out of it, and it's because their children are getting an education. But we were all afraid. As it turned out, it didn't turn out that way. They had a hard life, but still, you know, they weren't killed. Well, I don't know much about them except that they were all sent to re-education camps, and they were being indoctrinated in the communist life, I guess, or, you know, communist beliefs. And so I think from what I've read, I didn't even hear this from the children, that they had to listen to lectures constantly about communism. And then they were made to do menial labor. And then eventually some of them escaped. I got the doctor who signed the papers for me to get the children at, was in a re-education camp, and he finally escaped to Thailand and got a message to me, and I got the International Rescue Committee to help me get him over, and he finally ended up in San Diego. He was a doctor, and I helped him get his certification in the United States. Wonderful man, wonderful man. I mean, I couldn't have gotten the children out without him. He had to sign the papers. They had to be signed by a Vietnamese official. My what? Oh, HALO, Helping and Loving Orphans. Well, I started out in Vietnam, and I started by giving the children, seeing that they got to doctors. A lot of there's a group of doctors with Face the Challenge that come over and do facial surgeries, and there are quite a few cleft palates and, you know, facial problems with kids, and I started taking them. And then I went to Quang Ngai, which is where Tom Dooley had his first clinic, and I asked them how much it would cost to build another building because they were very crowded, and they said it would cost about $24,000, and I raised the money, and they built this beautiful building that took over 50 new children off the streets. And so then after that, I built a nursery for $12,500. And this past year went over and dedicated a vocational school. And this is the trend now, is that they want the children to learn a trade so that the children in orphanages are not thrown out on the streets when they're 15, 16, but that they, and not begging then, they can at least have a trade. So this new vocational school has sewing machines and then a room with all electrical equipment so that the boys can learn. And so I'm building another. I have another one just completed up in Bao Lam, and that's for the ethnic minorities. And then Swan, one of my onluck, the one that's a nurse, said that they didn't have a clinic or a well at Phuc Long, so I'm putting a clinic in there. So I raised money to do things like that, and then I decided to help the children in an orphanage in Bogota. That's all disabled children. And then I have an orphanage in Mexico that is in dire need of everything. And then I went to Afghanistan last year, and I'm helping a physical therapy clinic because the children have no way, if they step on a mine or something like that, to even learn to walk. So the physical therapy clinic helps them. And I'm going to try to help the maternity hospitals because they have the highest rate of deaths among babies in the world, I think. So that's where I am today, raising money. I'm a beggar. And you can see my website. You know what my website is. And, yeah. Well, not everywhere, but I know eventually I'll be in Iraq once we quit bombing that country to pieces. It's a shame. It's a shame what we're doing. You can tell my political leanings. It's a shame. It's a shame. You can't level a whole city or village or whatever they're doing and expect the people to come back to build their lives again, you know? And the children are suffering. So we can send over Christmas boxes. What good is that going to do in March and April? They don't even celebrate Christmas. In the beginning, I was all for the war. I had this feeling about the communists, you know, what they do to people and so on. But after a while, I realized that They only wanted one country, and they wanted to be united. And it's like our Civil War, the North and the South. You want to be one country. And although it's communist now, they are one country, and they are surviving. And companies are going over there and helping them economically. It's still a communist country, so you have to be careful what you say, I'm sure. But by and large, I think once the French left, we should have left them alone, period. Because the French kept them as slaves for 100 years. I can give you a history lesson on that one. Yeah, I was sorry. I mean, we bombed out villages. We, you know, whatever we did, they did, and so on. And children got separated from their families. Parents died. It's cruel. Women and children are the victims of wars. I mean, we can have, 1,200 of our soldiers are being killed, but how many mothers and children are being killed over there? Terrible. Well, at the time, I thought it was a wonderful idea to save the lives of these babies. And they weren't all babies. You know, as I say, some of them were 10, 12 years old. But it seems to me they had the... If you could see the pictures of the children I left behind as adults with their own children, there is a 100% difference in what they look like and with what the children who were raised here look like. They're, at least our children are taller, stronger, and have a good education, whereas they have had a very hard life. Very hard. $20 a month is about the maximum of what they can make. But their children are going to survive, and the country's going to be better for it. Swan's son works for a coffee company, and he's a biologist. And I said, how much do you make? His name is Jung. And he said, I make $100 a month. And he's so proud of that. And I said, I'm so proud of you because you got your education. It was great. So they are surviving. It will be a good country after a while, you know. It is now. Not bad. I don't mind going back there. The only thing I don't like is the heat. But other than that, I love everything else. My last will and testament. Yeah. I don't know whether I have any last words because I'm not finished yet. But I love all the children I brought over. Some of them kept in touch with me. Most of them did. I think they are better off here, but I'm sorry that they're unable to find any biological families because we just didn't have the papers for them. But I would love to hear from or see any of them and help them in any way I can. And the ones that are over there, I'm helping them by. Dr. Dooley used to say, give them an education and a healthy body, and they'll be the future citizens of their country. And that's what I'm doing now, building the vocational schools. And I buy milk for one orphanage, $1,500 a month buys milk for them. And they sent me a picture saying, see our healthy bodies. So if we can do that for any country we're in, an education and health, they'll be the future citizens of their countries. Oh, okay. Oh, we are? No, 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 no. I go around and I give lots of talks. I was in Friday Harbor here and gave 8 talks in 2 days. And mostly they were to schools. And the children, surprisingly, it's like talking about any of our wars. They don't know about it. And the Vietnam War is sort of in the past now. And they were very interested. And the fifth graders and the middle schools asked some wonderful questions. And they want to help, you know, so. They had their names on strips of tape that we taped on their little blouses, and of course they were thrown away in the bins, and the names were lost. Yeah, that's right. That's what they did. It was an adoption agency. Well, they placed for adoption older placed children, if you want to say that. Okay. The Trezor Lutheran Adoption Agency were noted for placing older children, hard-to-place children who were handicapped in some way.